This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Trainer Todd Pletcher has reached the stratosphere.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Moon over Miami for Bill Mott.
3,000 for trainer Mark Cassie.
Trainer D-Way Lucas, a 6th win.
And Bob Baffert with another incredible milestone.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Win number 1,000 for the great Trevor McCarthy.
Here's 2,000 for Nick Zito.
Steve Aspison is now North America's all-time leading trainer.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show, Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk, and it is all presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, as always, happy to have you in the saddle with me for the next hour on Sirius 162, XM 207, streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net and available anywhere you get your podcasts each and every week. Well, my guest on today's edition of Trainer Talk brings with him one of the most extensive trainer pedigrees of any trainer to have appeared on this show over the past decade plus. But he's no longer making his living saddling horses. In November, after spending time working alongside his father, he moved from the shed row to the office. He stepped into his new role as the executive director of the Kentucky HBPA. With either career choice, he was guaranteed to have big shoes to fill. His father, Greg Foley, has saddled more than 1,500 winners with numerous graded stakes wins to his credit. His predecessor in his new role at the Kentucky HBPA, Marty Maline, had sat in the director's chair for nearly five decades. Former trainer Alex Foley is well aware of that legacy, which he is now entrusted with building upon in the Bluegrass State. And it is my pleasure to welcome Alex to Trainer Talk here today, all presented by Fasig Tipton. Alex, appreciate the visit.
Thanks for having me, guys. Pleasure to be on with you all.
You know, I reached out to you in November asking you to join me on this program after you had been hired as the executive director. And you mentioned you wanted to wait until you got settled in and had a better understanding and grasp of everything that goes along with that position. So let's start there. What things have stood out to you in your first 5 months on the job?
Well, when I first started out, to be perfectly honest with you, I didn't really know exactly how much the Kentucky HBPA or National HBPA had their hand in. So that was, I kind of needed to get my feet wet, learn everything that they do and the ins and outs of the daily racing in the Bluegrass State. And the number one thing that we do is negotiating with all five of our racetracks. And I needed to get a grasp on our contracts, what we had, when we needed to realign those. That was number one. And then we're working with Frankfurt. I didn't know all the politics of the job yet, so I learned those pretty quick.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. You mentioned negotiating all of the contracts with the five racetracks in Kentucky. Talk about some, not specifically what those negotiations entail, but talk about some of the things that need to be discussed when you sit down and meet with the racetracks.
So our main thing is we try to just secure the highest purses possible. And as you know, their purses in Kentucky are higher than anywhere in the country at the moment. And then just equitable shares, the simulcasting revenues that they bring in. And then thanks to the HHR machine, the purses have just skyrocketed. And then just track safety. And then for our horses, our horsemen and women. Stuff like that.
Those things don't sound like they'd be difficult negotiations. It sounds like that's something that everybody would want to see accomplished.
Well, I think everybody has the common goal. It's just crunching the numbers is kind of the hard part sometimes. But we have great relationships with all the tracks right now. And that when I started, we're just in a great place in Kentucky right now.
Were there things that took you by surprise? You mentioned having to learn some of those things, and you didn't know how much the Kentucky HBPA and National HBPA had their hands in, all the different pieces to the puzzle, if you will. Were there things that took you by surprise, even after spending all that time on the racetrack, and you said, oh, my goodness, I had no idea that they were doing this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, not completely by surprise, just because Rick Hiles was a good friend of mine even before I got in office. Just the politics of the job, day to day, because I mean, I'm a horseman. I grew up a horseman, so I had that when I even first stepped into the office. But the politics of the job was the one thing that kind of surprised me.
Do you think that being a horseman, a lifelong horseman, that helps you when you're now navigating those waters?
Oh, absolutely. I think that was one of the main reasons that I had so many supporters for this position, just because, I mean, I've been in the shed row. I know exactly what it takes. I know how hard it is. It's a 7-day-a-week, 365-day job for those guys. And I think they wanted somebody in there that would go to battle for them and think like they do and know how to politic the other side.
I'm glad you bring that up, because that's, you know, obviously what this whole show, Trainer Talk, was based upon when I originally started it, was taking people inside the life of a trainer and talking about the different aspects of a trainer's life, not just on the racetrack, but away from the racetrack. So you mentioned 24/7 and 365 days a year. Exactly what does training racehorses entail?
Well, number one, you better have an early alarm clock. So, I mean, we get up, I did, 3:30, 4 o'clock every single day. Just, horses are like having a kid. Just because you don't feel good one day doesn't mean that they do. You got to get up, take care of them, train them. So you get to the barn about 4:30, hit the track 5:30. You got your training schedule for your horses, and you cool them out. You got your treatment for the day, whether it's the blacksmith, or if you're running that day, everything that goes into that. Then it's just, it's every day and it doesn't stop. That's what makes it so hard. Like I mentioned, it's like having a child, just continuous battle.
Is that part of what led you to move the direction that you have and be the executive director of the HBPA?
Slightly.
Yeah.
You have to love doing it to be a horseman, just because, like I said, it's every single day. And if you don't love it and you're doing something every single day, you're going downhill in life. But I was raised on the racetrack. My father taught me how to be a horseman and what it takes to be a good one. And it's daily attention to detail. And I love the life, in all honesty. I didn't want to leave it. But my family and close friends, everybody said I could do better in the office than I could in the shed row for them.
Sounds to me like you miss it.
I do miss it every now and then, but like I said, I can do way, way better for the horsemen in the office than I can in the barn. So that's why I'm here, and I'm here to go to battle for them.
Have you found that to be the case in your first 5 months?
What's that?
That you can do more good where you are now as opposed to working in the shed row?
Absolutely. It's not even close. With everything that we have our hands in, I can accomplish more for them sitting in that office than I can anywhere else.
It was interesting. I was flipping through your bio on the Kentucky HBPA website, and you were asked about your predecessor, Marty Maline, and he served in that position for 47 years, and you were asked if you thought you would be there for 47 years, and you didn't hesitate. You said, I know I have some pretty big shoes to fill. So what do you think? Do you see yourself in that position for 5 decades?
I hope so. I love being here, and Marty was just a phenomenal, phenomenal director and just a good guy in general. That's the goal. I want this to be my life, and that was why I stepped into this office.
How much interaction did you have with Marty and with the Kentucky HBPA when you were on the training side of things?
You know, I didn't have a whole lot of interaction with Marty himself. Rick Hiles was who I was close with, just because he was on the backside with us all the time. So I actually didn't know Marty all that well while I was training. HBPA, I'd pop in there just
every now and then to get a condition book or overnight, stuff like that. But I didn't have a whole lot of interaction with him, to be perfectly honest with you.
How much has he influenced or helped you in this transition to being the executive director now?
Marty, like you said, he's been here for 47 years. If I could do half what he accomplished for Kentucky Racing, I'd be a hero in Kentucky. But yeah, he's been great in the transition. If I ever need him, I can call him. Rick Hiles is still with us. He comes, meets with me every single day. I've got a great support system and couldn't be in a better place.
Yeah, Rick Hiles, the president of the Kentucky HPPA. Rick, a former trainer himself, so he, much like you, I mean, he gets it. Rick is still training, right?
Yeah, he's got a few horses.
Yeah.
He's here at Churchill.
Yep. Yeah, that's what I thought. I mean, he doesn't have the numbers he once had, but he still dabbles in it, and he still runs horses, right?
Absolutely. I joke with him all the time. I keep him so busy in the HPPA, he doesn't have time to have too many horses.
Well, I'm wondering now, after looking at Rick's resume and knowing that he's wearing both hats, do you see a scenario down the road where Alex Foley is training horses and being the executive director of the Kentucky HPPA?
Oh, no. As much as I'd like to, there's no way in heck I had time to do that. I might try to dabble in owning some down the road, but no, training is out of my cards in the future.
It's just something about this game that gets in your blood, and it's so difficult to pull yourself away from it. I tried years and years ago before I even got into radio, and I've been doing this now 21 years. I stepped away from working at Thoroughbred Times to go do something else, and then that didn't last long. I had to be back doing something with horse racing, which eventually led to this radio career, which has been wonderful, but I couldn't stay away.
It's just how it is, man. I mean, I went to school, it seemed like forever, and then I came out here, and I mean, I grew up here anyways, but once you get out here and you're here every day, there's really nothing like it, and I mean, that's probably one of the main reasons that everybody wanted me in this office is because I know what it takes to be out here every single day, hard work, dedication. I know the feeling of the bad days when you have a bad day when you're born, and then I know the feelings of the triumphant days. So it's just the ups and downs. There's really nothing like it.
It sounds to me like you were recruited for this position, like a number one college athlete.
Well, I don't know about that, but I had a lot of supporters on the backside that wanted me in that office just because they knew I could go to bat for them and I would think like they do.
Yeah, yeah. Talking with trainer Alex Foley, former trainer Alex Foley, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Alex, now, if you're just joining us, is serving as the executive director of the Kentucky HPPA and looking to do more good things for those who he loves dearly on the racetrack, and I'm talking about the horsemen there. Alex, let's go back to the beginning. There are numerous Foleys in this family tree, and they're all, it seems like, involved in horse racing. But take me back to the beginning. How did Alex Foley first become introduced to racing and get hooked on the sport?
So me, personally, I went to school at Bellarmine. I played golf there, and then I went straight to law school after that. And then while I was studying for the bar, Dad was like, why don't you come out to the barn with me, work for me? So I went out there. My brother Travis was his assistant at the time. Well, he still is. And then I started working for him. And like we talked about earlier, just once you get out there, you can't leave, and it gets in your blood. And like you said, my family's been in this game for so long. It's been in my blood for all 32 of my years.
Yeah, do you remember the early days when you were hanging out around the racetrack? What was that like?
Oh, my early years. My dad took me to the barn when I was 4 years old.
Wow. Now,
he'd take me out there before I even started school. We joked about it last night. He put me up on the pony when I was like 5 years old, and he'd just walk around a barn with me sitting on his saddle. No, I've grown up in this game, and
It's just, there's nothing like it.
Did you know, even from that early age, that this is what you were going to do with your life? Or was there a time when you started to kind of think, maybe I'll do something away from horse racing?
Well, kind of as we talked about earlier, just, this life is so hard on you. My father and my mother kind of tried to push my brother and I away from it just to pursue other avenues. That's why they sent me to school, sent me to law school. And it just, I found out that wasn't for me. And then I came out here. And then when I was right around my mid-20s, I realized that I wasn't leaving the sport. But it was definitely not what I thought my life would be growing up.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned playing golf at Bellarmine, and I'm flipping through right now looking at some of your stats. You were pretty good.
Oh, please.
You could play a little bit.
Don't do that to me.
You could play a little bit.
I was all right back in the day when you could practice every single day.
But yeah. Do you play much now?
I try to. We actually had a scramble yesterday for the national chaplaincy, and I was joking. I was like, I'm supposed to be your all's ringer, but I play about once a month now, so sorry about your loss.
I'm sure you still acquitted yourself very well.
I will say that I'm better than most.
Yeah.
But I definitely don't get to play as much as I'd like to.
How much does we hear athletes and golfers talk about that, right? That taking time off, you're not as sharp as you would be if you were playing every day. It makes sense. How much of a difference does that really make?
100% difference. Your feel's not the same. Everything just seems off when you. Well, depends on what level you're playing. If you're just casually playing, it doesn't really matter. But when your feel's off and you don't feel comfortable over the ball or anything like that, you're in some serious trouble if you're playing at a competitive level.
Do you think that competitiveness helps you now in your role?
That means it's a little bit in terms of just always wanting to get the best out of any situation. Golf itself is such a mental game. You're battling yourself more so than your competitors, and that's a little bit different in this role, because I'm looking out for everybody else instead of myself. So that's the biggest difference between golf and this position.
When you started playing at Bellarmine, were you thinking maybe turning professional at some point? Was that the goal when you first started as a freshman?
Absolutely not. To be honest, golf was my second sport. I thought I was a basketball phenom in high school, but I didn't quite have the athletic ability to pursue that dream. And I had actually, going into my freshman year, the summer prior, I had a good junior golf summer, and my coach, Ernie Denham, rest in peace, recruited me after I won a few tournaments. And I was a last minute addition to the team. He offered me a scholarship, I want to say I think it was July going into the semester, but it started in August. So I signed with Bellarmine about a month prior to school starting.
Wow, that's really cool. You'll be glad to know I can't find your high school basketball stats anywhere online.
Oh, man. I was all right. I went to North Oldham High School. We were okay, but I think everything worked out the way it was supposed to. I loved my 4 years at Bellarmine. One of my best friends is on the team. He's still my best friend today.
Yeah. Yeah, Norm Cassie is also a Bellarmine guy, isn't he?
Yep, he is.
He was a baseball player, though.
I didn't actually even know that. He's a little older than me, but Norm was a Bellarmine Knight. My man Kevin Kirstein is Bellarmine.
I knew that about Kevin.
Oh, yeah, he's the biggest Bellarmine basketball fan you'll ever meet.
Wow. I think Dale Romans is right up there, too, isn't he?
He's up there, but I think KK tops the list.
I love it. I love it. See, those kind of relationships, you're throwing out names now. Kevin Kirstein works in the media and publicity department now at Churchill Downs. He's responsible for all the Kentucky racetracks, I believe, or at least the majority of them. Does a tremendous job. He's been on this program many times. But we're talking about him and Norm Cassie and Dale Romans. Alex, that's a huge advantage for you. You have these relationships, and you've had them for a long time, with so many people around the racetrack in Kentucky.
I mean, I've grown up in this game. My grandfather was a trainer. My father, my brother's in it, my Aunt Vicky. I mean, I've been around it since I've been born. So, I mean, I've developed relationships with these guys. I mean, Dale, like a second father figure to me growing up. You get to know these guys on a professional level, but I have a personal relationship with a lot of the guys back here, which is absolutely fantastic for me.
You're not the first person to come on this show and say that Dale was like a father figure to them, or a second father, whatever the case might be. It just seems like that's Dale Romans, and people don't often see that side of him.
No, that's the case for a lot of the guys back here. Just they don't get to know him on a personal level. Just this whole backside, whatever racetrack you go to, it's a family back here. That's how we've always looked at it, and that's how we hope to continue and always will be. Just we look out for each other, and we always will.
Outside of your family, your dad, your grandfather, I know you obviously looked up to them, but were there other trainers around the backside that you would kind of study or spend a lot of time with and say, man, someday maybe I can be like that?
When I first started on the backside, when I was studying for the bar, Steve Asmussen actually hired me for a couple years, and I got real close with his assistant, Scott Blasi. And their operation is just phenomenal, the attention to detail that they have. And if I was to pursue my training career, that besides my father's, that would be what I would hope for and wish for my life. But Everything that they do is just top of the line and just perfectly orchestrated.
What do you mean by that? We hear trainers say that a lot. Everything they do is just first class. They do it right. What does that mean when a trainer says that about another trainer?
It's just a well-oiled machine, actually, how they do it. It's because he's got so many horses. I mean, first of all, Steve's got to be a genius to do what he does, just because I'm not smart enough to remember all the stuff that he does. He could go back 15 years and tell you where one horse finished on what day. But he goes through his set list. He knows any sort of training methods that they need, any unique method that they need to do, equipment. He knows how far each horse trained that morning. He knows when to enter them. And he does it all himself, too. He talks with each assistant at each track. It's just actually incredible what he does. It's just something to look up to and aspire to be. Like I said, he's way smarter than me.
Yeah, have you gotten the chance? Well, I'm sure you have, but have you had much opportunity over the years to spend time picking his brain a little bit, if you will?
Yeah, absolutely. Scott Blasi actually had me, I think it was 3 years ago. I spent the summer in Saratoga with him. And just the knowledge that he has about this game, the ins and outs of it, how to train, how to enter, it was a pleasure to work for him and just something I'll be forever grateful for.
There's so much more to training racehorses than just walking a horse over in the afternoon, putting a saddle on him, giving a leg up to the jockey and saying, go get him. There are so many other elements that people from the outside looking in don't even realize goes into making that profession and being successful at it.
It's just unbelievable, actually, everything that it takes to get a horse over there to run a horse. I mean, if you start them out from a yearling, you have to break them, you get them to the track, and then you just have, I mean, training's the easy part. I mean, you worry every night something's going to happen to them in their stalls, if they get sick, just they're put together awkwardly, you got to
train them in a unique way to put up with that. Just the ins and outs of training racehorses is just so difficult to get a horse to run. And I think a lot of people take that for granted and don't appreciate what the job that a lot of these trainers do.
I want to spend more time talking about your father, Greg Foley, here in the second half of the program. But tell me more about your grandfather. He saddled over 1,100 winners himself, right?
Yep. Dravo is the one that started the Foley lineage in the horse racing. So we can thank Dravo for that. He was a legend in this game. He died before I got to actually get to know him and appreciate everything he did for the family and the sport. But believe me, plenty of people remember and tell me stories about him, and he was something else and just an incredible horseman. And that's kind of what we tried to, or he tried to pass down to my father, and he's trying to do with my brother and I. But Travis and I, which is my brother, I think we'll both agree that we'll never be the horseman my father is.
Yeah, your dad has had so much success. And again, we're going to talk about him. We're coming up on a commercial break in about 2 minutes, but we're going to talk more about your dad and his legacy and some of his top horses as we move through the second half of the program here on Trainer Talk. Your grandfather, you said he kind of started it. He paved the way. He's the one who laid the foundation, if you will. And that foundation has led to an incredible Foley training tree and a horseman tree, if you want. And there's a big difference there too, Alex, between a horse trainer and a horseman. I've always said you have to differentiate between the two, because there are a lot of horse trainers out there, but being a horseman and a horse trainer is a whole different thing.
Yes, absolutely agree. There's different layers to that. I won't say anybody can train a horse, but doing it right is very, very, very difficult to get right. And luckily, in Kentucky, we've got a lot of good ones.
Yeah. What's the key to doing it right?
Just attention to detail every single day. That's what it takes. Just pay attention to the smallest changes in your animal and be able to cipher what needs to be done based on whether it's a health-related issue, fitness, or just where to run your horse. Just being able to pinpoint exactly what's going on every single day, that's pretty much what it takes.
You said that many people now will tell you stories about your grandfather, Dravo, and some of the things that he did or how he did things. Can you recall, and I'll put you on the spot a little bit here, can you recall one of your favorite stories that you've heard about your grandfather?
Oh, that's actually an easy one for me. What he used to do for the jockeys, if he liked one of his horses that day and thought he'd run well, he'd bet $500 for the jockey. And then I guess one time he won the race. And then after the race, he called the jockey over. He goes, "I got something for you." And the jockey was like, "Oh boy, what's this?" handed him a $500 winning ticket. I don't have any clue what the horse paid or whatever, but I always thought that was funny and pretty cool.
That's fantastic. I love those kind of stories, and that's something that, it's kind of old school, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I don't think that happens too much these days. But that was one of my favorite Dravo stories, just because I could 100% see him doing it with a big smirk on his face.
Well, Dravo started this Foley legacy, and it continues to this day. I'm visiting with Alex Foley, former trainer, worked alongside his dad, Greg. He is now the executive director of the Kentucky HBPA. Alex, stay with me. We're going to continue this visit and talk more about your dad in the second half of the program. That's all next, right here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Nominate now for this year's Fasig Tipton Selected Yearling Sales. The July Sale. A strong market for precocious and athletic yearlings that attract the sport's leading end users. Last year, 40% of yearlings sold brought $100,000 or more. The 103rd Saratoga Sale. The crown jewel of American yearling sales, Saratoga set new sale records for the second year in a row, including the highest price yearling sold in the world in 2023.
Tice upstairs, $4 million even.
New York Bred Yearlings, the number one marketplace for New York Breds, held during the Saratoga race meet. Selected sales, superior results. Visit selectedyearlings.phasictipton.com to nominate now and rise above the crowd at our 2024 Selected Yearling Sales.
Well, Phasic's family, basically. Some of the guys that work here I've known for 30 years. I just felt really supported, and they're great communicators. They try to help in whatever you do.
Phasic Tipton's has a sale for every market, every segment in the industry. There's multiple opportunities where you're going to have plenty of good buying and selling situations.
Great customer service. I'm not only a buyer with them, but I'm a seller, and I've always been well taken care of.
There's a lot of different things that sometimes you need at a sale, and Phasic Tipton is there every step of the way.
They show year after year that they're ethical and they're fair, and they enjoy what they do. And when you're around people that have a combination of all those things, you know, you can't lose.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Stitch is revving up with a three-wide bid. Hutch Revenge is down toward the inside play action pass. Hosier is in with a shot. And now Set Piece has been moved to the far outside. Five lengths to make up. They're off the turn and Get Smokin' set down for the drive. Stitch to the attack. Get Smokin' and Stitched. 1-2. Final 16th. Set Piece late on the scene. Down to the wire. Here comes Stitched. Stitched grabs the lead and does it. 46-1. Running down, Get Smokin'. Farther back, either Set Piece, Camp Hope, or Hosier.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here on HRRN. That was the voice of Travis Stone with the call of last year's Wise Dan Stakes at Churchill Downs. Won by Stitched, as you just heard, 46-1. The upsetter, trained by Greg Foley. I am visiting with his son and his longtime assistant, Alex Foley, here on the program here this morning. And I say longtime assistant, it wasn't like he served in that role for 20 or 25 years, but he was around his dad's operation from the age of four, as he told you in the first half of the program. And we're going to talk more about that journey coming up in the second half of the show, right after I remind you that if you missed any portion of this edition of Trainer Talk or any of the programs we bring your way throughout the week, make sure you check out our podcast. You can do that on our website, horseracingradio.net, and you can do that too on every podcast platform. So however you access your podcast, type in Horse Racing Radio Network and follow along all week long. And by the way, coming up on our Derby Countdown shows again this year, we are less than 2 weeks away from the launch of those programs. They kick off April 30th, Tuesday morning, live from Churchill Downs. We'll bring you those shows 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday mornings. Those Derby Countdown programs, all presented by our friends at Hillandale at Alapa, will be live from Churchill Downs with all the connections. You'll hear from Oaks contenders. You'll hear from Derby contenders. You'll hear from jockeys and trainers and owners who have been part of this Kentucky Derby and made it what it is for many, many years. They are fantastic programs, and we'll throw in a handicapping segment or two and live updates of the horses on the racetrack during morning training. All that comes up Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, April 30th through May 2nd. Visit our website for more information on our Derby Countdown shows. Alex, that call we just heard of Stitched upsetting the Wise Dan Stakes, I'm sure that put a smile on your face.
Oh, that's one of my favorite races of all time. That was a good day.
Yeah, that was a great day. And I always say, hey, horses can't read the tote board. He didn't know he was 46-1.
He didn't know it, but dang, he ran good that day. And Bango actually won earlier on that same day, so we had two stake winners in the same day. And that was actually – it was Churchill's card, but that was when they ran it at Ellis Park.
Yes. You're right. Yeah, that's exactly right.
So we had the full family in Henderson, Kentucky for that day, and it was a big day in Henderson for the Foleys.
How'd you celebrate?
It's actually funny. Dad got asked that same question, and he said, it's kind of embarrassing, but I'm going to be honest with you. my wife and I drove home and we got a Big Mac from McDonald's. And I was pretty much similar in the same boat, but we had a good day at the races.
Do you know how many times I've asked trainers that question on this show? How'd you celebrate your big win? And so many times they'll say, well, I went out, I had a couple glasses of wine, or I was so tired after the races, I went right back home, got some sleep because I had to be back at the barn at 4:30 the next morning. So you don't get a lot of time to celebrate when you're a horse trainer.
Exactly. That's spot on, because whether you win or you run dead last, you still got to get up and do it again tomorrow.
So your Stitched is one horse that comes to mind when you think about your dad, probably most recently because the winner of that Grade 2 Wise Dan Stakes last year. But names like Bango, who you mentioned, and Sconson, and Champ Ali, if you want to go back that far, those are horses that, my goodness, when you think about Greg Foley and that operation, those are horses that truly stand out.
Yeah, those are some of the big names that help kind of skyrocket our barn, our dad's barn. Obeso's got to be on there. Major Fed was our first Derby horse. He'll always hold a special place. He's got so many good ones. Champ Ali is probably my personal favorite, going back to early 2000s, because he was my, I'm not going to say dad's first real good one, but he's the first one that I remember taking us to graded stake races, Breeders' Cups, just kind of put dad's name on the map even more so than it already was.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite Champ Ali story you like to tell?
Well, he won the Phoenix, which was a Grade 3 at the time, I think, at Keeneland, and we had all the owners, family was there. I think I was like 11. I don't remember exactly, but that was terrific. Going out on the turf course, getting the trophy, and going in the champagne room. That was 100% my favorite Champ story and win. Then he took us to the Breeders' Cup in, I don't know exactly the year, but it was at Lone Star. He ran in the sprint. It was the year Spikestown won.
Mm-hmm.
That was a fun trip.
Yeah, I remember Champ Ali winning, was it the, I guess it was the Smile Sprint Handicap too, down in Florida, right?
Oh, that's right. He won it. I was actually Calder at the time.
Yeah.
And I do have a good story for you on that one. So he won by a nostril over a horse called Clock Stopper. And my mother, who does not gamble on anything ever, like to this day, she said, she's a very religious person.
Mm-hmm.
She said that God came to her in a dream the night before, or spoke to her and said, he's going to win this race, bet $100 on him to win. And dad was like, well, I hope he's right. and so mom looked in her, because she usually doesn't even carry cash on her. She looked in her purse and she had $100 bill and that was it. So she bet on him, and then you won't remember how close the photo was, but it looked like he lost. But mom said she knew that he won and marched to the winner's circle before they even posted him as the winner, because she said God told her so.
Wow. Well, can you give your mom my cell phone number, and the next time she has one of those dreams, could she just shoot me a text and let me know about that horse?
That's what I've told her countless times afterwards. I was like, when's the next time? She just goes, I don't know. He just spoke to me.
I love it.
To this day, though.
That was Champ Ali and Jerry Bailey outgaming Clockstopper and Pat Day by a nose that day, paid $7.20 for the win. How about that?
Mom couldn't wait to cash that ticket.
Good for her. He would come back after that and win the Phoenix Stakes at Keeneland. You talked about that and what that moment was like for your family, and then took you out to the Breeders' Cup at Lone Star, and that was, you know, you said the year Spikestown won. That was a pretty salty race, as it typically is.
Oh, Spikestown was a freak, and the Champ kind of, he got away slow that year, but I don't know if he was ever beaten Spikestown regardless.
Yeah. How cool is it though just to be part of that experience?
It's why you do this game, those big races. You're surrounded by the best equine athletes, best trainers in the world. Everybody I used to read about on TV, now they're my friends. It's so cool to be a part of it. You hope your horse runs well, but it's just an honor to be there, in all honesty.
You mentioned the name Major Fed, the horse that took you and Dad to your first Kentucky Derby. That was in 2020. What do you remember about that experience?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is that it was COVID.
Yeah.
So when we got to do the walkover and the whole Derby experience, there was no spectators. So we were not disappointed in the fact that there just wasn't the full experience, but maybe a little bit. But it was just still so cool to be a part of that experience and just feeling like we made it is what it felt like. But COVID was the number one thing I remember. And then the walkover, even though there weren't any spectators, was something I'd always dreamed about doing.
The following year, 2021, you come back again with Obesos. Major Fed ended up finishing 10th in 2020, but Obesos, a much better effort, finished 4th in 2021. And you were able to get some of that Derby feel, right? A little bit more of that Derby experience in 2021.
Absolutely. Obesos year, you got the full – no, it wasn't full atmosphere what it will be this year, but it was pretty close for us anyways. And turning for home, when he had a little run in and he cut the corner, we all stood up and we all had goosebumps cheering him on down the stretch. That's something that we always wish for, what Dad always talks about. He just said, always wanted a chance turning for home in the Kentucky Derby, and Obesos gave it to him. So I'm sure he's changed a little bit now. Now your goals always keep getting bigger. Now he just wants to win it.
Yeah, now he wants to win it. Now he got a little taste of what it's like to be almost at the top of the mountain. You want to go grab that brass ring now, right?
Exactly. Never satisfied in this game.
Well, you can't be. If you're going to be great at anything in life, you have to be driven, right?
Exactly. That's what gets everybody up in the mornings. Just whether you got a good one now or you're looking for that next one, it just keeps your eye on the prize and looking forward to the future. And that's what we do and what we hope for every day.
How do you put into words, Alex, what it's like to be the trainer of a horse that is making a run through the stretch of the Kentucky Derby and giving you that thrill? How do you describe it?
It's just what you work so hard for every day. You watch this horse, most of the time, you watch the horse grow up from a yearling. You've put in the work with him. You've got him to that point. It's just a sense of pride. And it's like watching your kid do well in whatever aspect of life that they're trained for so many years. Just, you put in all that work and effort, and whether they win or lose, they're giving it their best, and it's just a sense of pride.
In the first half of the show, you spent time talking about Steve Asmussen and his approach to the game and what makes him so successful. How about with your dad? What do you think has allowed him to have so much success over the years?
He's just an incredible horseman. That is the main thing with Dad. He's fantastic with an animal. He can spot the smallest speck on one of their legs and know something's wrong or needs to fix something. And he'd be trying to teach me and be like, "You don't see that?" I'm like, "No, Dad, I don't see anything." But every single animal that he's got in his barn, he cares for as if it's his own. And that is why Dad's successful.
What are some of the things that you learned from him? Some of the things he really tried to instill in you that you'll never forget, but maybe even more so that are helping you as you transition to your new role as the executive director of the Kentucky HBPA?
He's just so dedicated to his craft, and I've watched that my whole life growing up to this day. He does everything for the animal. his business, and he's so just attention to detail oriented. And I think that is the number one thing I take from him, just how hard he has to work to make sure that every animal is primed and ready to run as possible. And I think you can carry that over into any business or job you have. I think that helps me tremendously on a day-to-day basis.
When I say the name Sconson, what things come to mind?
Oh, that's the big mare. She is one of my favorite horses he's ever trained. She's beautiful, well put together, won countless races for us, laid it all on the line every day. My favorite thing about her was how soft she was in her stall. A lot of people thought because she was such a good racehorse, she might be a little mean in the stall. But she was spoiled rotten. She'd have apples and carrots, mints every single day. And then after she'd train in the morning, she'd lay down in her stall and hang her head right out of the stall. Like taking a nap. She was one of the coolest horses we've ever had.
She wins the eight. Go ahead.
Actually, the family went and saw her. She had her first foal out of Gunrunner a couple weeks ago. They went and saw her and the baby. She's out at Ups and Downs out in Goshen.
Fantastic. Colt or filly?
Taking pictures with her.
Little colt or little filly?
Filly. She looks exactly like Sconson.
Ooh.
She got a big white blaze. Got white, couple white socks. She's almost a replica of her. In looks, anyway, we hope she's a runner like she was.
You said earlier that you might think about getting involved in owning a couple racehorses. Maybe that's a good one to start with.
Oh, I don't know. I can't afford her. I wish I could, but I can't.
I always wonder when trainers are working with a horse that is by, you know, like an offspring of one of the of a stallion that they trained and had a lot of success with, or a mare that they trained and had a lot of success with, and then they're training the baby. Does that give them any kind of advantage knowing the family tree, or is every horse just that much different where it really doesn't matter?
No, I think you could start with the pedigree. If you train the mama or the daddy, it gives you a little bit of insight just because of, say, Sconson had a quirk in her training to where she needed to do something a little different than some horses, which she did not. But if she did, that might give you some insight, but it might carry over to the baby. Pedigree is a good place to start, but every horse is unique, in my opinion.
It's really interesting. When you look at the horses that have come through your dad's operation over the years, and you see names like Sconson and Champ Ali, who we talked about. But even though those horses were great at stakes winners, even Stitch, for that matter, all great at stakes winners, they are not the top earner that your dad has ever worked with. That comes down to that honor goes to Bango, who has earned more than $1.5 million, never won a great at stakes. But my goodness, Bango wins a lot.
We talk about that all the time. The fact that he hasn't won a great at stake is just mind-boggling to us. He's just a warrior is what he is. He's built like a tank and lays it all on the line every time he runs. We call him Mr. Churchill Downs because he's one win away from being the all-time leading winner at Churchill Downs, which we're hoping he gets. I think he's planning on running on Thurby this year, so that'll be a big day for the Foleys if he can get that done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be a huge day. It's incredible. We talked about this earlier. The legacy began with Dravo, your grandfather, then, of course, your dad and your aunt, Vicky. Tell me a little bit more about what she has accomplished. It's been incredible, too.
I always tease Dad. Vicky's the only Foley with a grade one victory in the family. You got to up his game a little bit. Yeah, she had that Hog Creek Hustle win up in, I think it was Belmont. He won the Woody Stevens.
Yep.
I think that's at Belmont. Yeah,
yep.
She won that. And Dad's sitting on all these graded wins, but doesn't have his grade one yet. I tease him about that all the time. But no, Vicky had, she had a great stable for so many years. She wasn't a huge stable, but she had around a dozen, and she did a great job. She had, with what she had a lot of good runners. She won a lot of stakes. She did a good job. She's exactly like Dad. She's a horsewoman just like all the Foleys are.
How about your brother, Travis?
He's learning to be like Dad in terms of horsemanship, but what he does for Dad that really allowed Dad to skyrocket in the past few years is he's our networker. He runs the business side of the operation, and he just does a fabulous job for him. And if you look at the Foley Barn earnings in the last few years, you can see when Trav kind of stepped in and took over the business side. And Dad handles the horsemanship of it, and Trav handles the rest, and he does a great job.
Such a big part of it. Such a big part of it. We talked about that earlier in the show, how there is so much more to being a horse trainer than just leading them over and saddling them in the afternoons. The business side of it, too, and what your brother is helping him with is enormous.
Like kind of we hinted at earlier, if you don't continue to grow in this business, you're doomed for failure.
Yep.
And that's what Trav does. He gets new clients. He's trying to get new people into the game. He's growing the game along with my father's business. It's what it takes to be successful in this game. And he's kind of pinpointed it and doing a great job.
Talking with Alex Foley, who worked alongside his dad, Greg, learned everything he could about being a horse trainer, and then transitioned last November to where his new role, which is now the executive director of the Kentucky HBPA, and he is doing wonderful things there as well. Alex, let's talk about some of the things that make Kentucky racing so great and so special right now. And every Saturday morning, I have a segment on my Equine Forum show called Kentucky Bred, and it's sponsored by the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund, and we talk about all the good things happening in the state right now. And I don't know if it's ever been better, has it?
Absolutely not. The state of Kentucky racing right now is the purses are just sky high, and the facilities are growing tremendously. I mean, construction at Churchill Downs and Keeneland just seems ongoing. Our facilities are beautiful. Our horses are well-bred. Our purses are phenomenal. It's just no better place to run. And then with Turfway staying open in the winter and training year-round, it's just Kentucky's a year-long destination for our horsemen. And that's kind of what we always wanted, and that's what we have now.
What are some of the biggest factors that have led to Kentucky becoming this premier racing destination?
Just our purse structure, the way we have it now in terms of our revenues coming in from wagering and then the HHR machines, that's why the purses that are allowed to just skyrocket the way they are. That's probably number one. And then our breeding, Kentucky Breds are just world renowned to be one of the best bred horses in the world. And those two combined just allows us to be at the top of the game right now.
How much does the facilities, the racetracks play into this equation? We talk about the purses, and I know you started the first half of the show talking about negotiating with the different racetracks on behalf of the horsemen and all of those types of things, but the actual facility itself and the racing surfaces, they have to be safe and they have to be top-notch. How much does that play into the success that Kentucky is experiencing right now?
Just the science and technology that goes into each of our track services, whether it's the five main tracks or our training centers, it's just world class in terms of all the science and technology behind it. Our tracks are as safe as can be, all five of them. I mean, Ellis Park's phenomenal in the summertime, Turfway synthetic. It's just the place to be in the winter. Churchill Downs is just world-class, top of the line all the time. We're keeping our fingers crossed on the turf course. We don't know until we run on it. We'll see there. And Keeneland is just, like I said, world-class as well. Their turf course is beautiful. And Kentucky Downs is actually one of my favorite places to go. Their turf course is one of the most beautiful and well-kept in the world. Just to be as simple as it is, everybody thinks it's just some field. It's one of the safest places you can run. So it's just, I think that allows horsemen to feel confident coming here. And then combine that with the money they're running for, just couldn't be a better combo.
As a native of Louisville, when you talk to people in your new role as executive director of the Kentucky HBPA, when you talk to people about racing and breeding and selling in Kentucky, whatever the case might be, what are you most proud of when you talk to them about that, Alex?
I would just say coming from the racing family and growing up in the game and just seeing how much the game itself has grown. I mean, just a few years ago, it feels like the places were smaller, the fields were smaller, the money we ran for was smaller. Just how much the game has grown and it's continuing to grow, the interest that we have from the public. Just, I'm proud of this industry, and I'm proud to say that I'm in it. I'm proud of my family and all my colleagues on the backside.
And I would say that many people in the game, especially in the Bluegrass State, are proud that they can say you are the executive director of that organization, Alex. And I really appreciate you spending some time here with me. We're down to about the final minute and a half here in the program. So quickly, I always like to end by asking trainers to let me know something about them we haven't talked about yet. So I know you enjoy golf, having played it in college, but what other things does Alex Foley enjoy doing away from racing?
My best friend, one of them is Scott Blasey. And one of our things that we do every year is we travel down to South Florida. Granted, it is a golf trip. So I know this might not count, but traveling down there, just traveling in general, is one of my favorite things to do.
Fantastic. You deserve everything that you're going to get going forward. Alex, really appreciate the visit here, and all the best in the new role. All the best to your dad and your aunt and your brother and the entire Foley family as they continue to build on that legacy, which is already well established. Appreciate it, my friend.
Thank you, Mike. It was a pleasure.
All right. That is Alex Foley here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. If you missed any portion of the show, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast there, and you can do it too on every podcast platform. Be sure to follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network, on Facebook, on Instagram, and on YouTube. My thanks to my producer, Lee Della Pina, in our Lexington studios, to my special guest, Alex Foley, and to our sponsor, Phasic Tipton, for making this show possible every single week. I'm Mike Pennell. We'll talk to you next week on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.